At the time of the Reformation, a great truth was rediscovered that was in God's word. We're not saved by works, we're saved by grace. Now, one of the criticisms that was given of that teaching was that it would lead to laziness. If people don't think they have to do works to get to heaven, then why would they do them anyway? But the reality was that this couldn't be further from the truth. Far from believing that grace led away from works, the people of the Reformation thought that grace led them to work all the more. Like Paul said, "By the grace of God I am what I am, and his grace to me was not without effect. No, I worked harder than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me." They believed when God put his spirit in you, as the Bible teaches, he creates works and the desire to do them. And they condemned two forms of sloth or laziness in particular. Laziness in secular work and laziness in spiritual disciplines. So going to church, reading your Bible, prayer and the like. And what happened? Well, in the work sphere, secular economists still refer to the Protestant work ethic. That is the idea that the predominantly Protestant countries like England, US, Germany, Scandinavian countries, that they had much more success because they worked much harder than than other countries around the world. There was a change in laziness in secular work on a national scale. And laziness with spiritual disciplines was fought against. So Protestant countries saw people learning to read so they could read the Bible as families. They attended church multiple times on a Sunday and often multiple times in the week. In the Victorian era, many Sunday schools were set up that went between the two services to teach children. History shows that grace, that we are saved without works, doesn't lead to laziness. It actually bears fruit in all these good works. And you might ask, well, what's gone wrong? Because many Christians today struggle with those very things. Most of us struggle to do a daily devotion. We do find time for hours of social media. Most churches are finding it harder and harder to get volunteers for ministries. And in many churches, it's hard enough to get people to come one time a week, let alone twice or come into small group. Now, some of that's because of the temptation of our day. Most of us have the most effective distraction tool that humans have been able to create in our pockets right now. It is literally designed to rob you of attention. But some of that is also a failure to understand the consequences of our salvation. When Jesus saved us, he wanted to change us as well. He didn't want to just forgive us, then leave us to carry on with our worthless lives lived for no purpose. He wanted to change us and mold us into people who were doing incredible things for his glory. When we see what he calls us to, we'll see it's far more valuable than scrolling or watching TV or whatever you might be tempted to do on an evening. Laziness is a huge temptation, but it always has been. Proverbs is over 2,500 years old, but it sounds very familiar. It's a father telling his teenage son to get out of bed and get to work. It sounds quite familiar, doesn't it? And he does that in two ways. He does it by giving them a picture of the problems of laziness and by giving a positive picture of the joys that come with diligence or hard work. So let's look at that picture and see if it doesn't tackle our own laziness as well. So first of all, let's look at the characteristics of a lazy person. And there are five key characteristics of a lazy person in Proverbs. A lazy person is ridiculous, poor, deluded, selfish, and destructive. First, a lazy person is ridiculous. We read this before, chapter 26, verses 13 to 15. Now, Lucy asked me on the way, is there going to be anything funny tonight? Proverbs is always funny. And here's one for you. A sluggard, which just means like it's an old-fashioned word, it means like lazy bones or something like that. A sluggard says, "There's a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming the streets. As a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on his bed. A sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He's too lazy to bring it back to his mouth. A sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven people who answer discreetly. Here, Proverbs' mockery is on full display. There were lions in ancient Israel, but they were very rarely roaming the streets. And that picture of a door turning on its hinges, we can imagine the teenager sort of rolling in bed, not quite awake, but not really asleep either. He's so lazy, he puts his hand in this dish of food and he can't be bothered to lift it up again. It's sheer mockery. And it might surprise you that the Bible is so sarcastic, but it's an important way to fight laziness. And the young person reading this book needs to see that laziness isn't cool. It's ridiculous. It isn't an acceptable lifestyle. It's a waste of time. It's a joke. Do you ever think of what a joke your laziness may be? Sometimes mocking our laziness is a good way for us to see how ridiculous it is and that that's not the life we want to live. So a lazy person is ridiculous. Secondly, a lazy person is poor. Now, we've got to be careful here. Proverbs doesn't advocate for an obsession with money, but it doesn't glorify poverty either. Proverbs 30, verses 8 to 9 say, "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread." Riches aren't to be desired, but neither is poverty. A happy medium where you've got enough to survive, but that you're not rolling in it. So it's not a joke when your family is scraping to survive. Poor doesn't mean that you don't have the latest gadget. Poor means that you haven't got food to put on the table. And you should be trying to get out of poverty if you're in it. Now, not every poor person is lazy. Sometimes people are in poverty because of the oppression of others. But most lazy people, the way the world works, is if you're lazy, then you won't earn enough money to get out of poverty. You will become poor. And that's what Proverbs tells us again and again as a warning. So, for example, Proverbs 24, verses 30 to 34, gives a little story of a sluggard. "I went past the field of a sluggard, past the vineyard of someone who has no sense. Thorns had come up everywhere. The ground was covered with weeds and the stone wall was in ruins. I applied my heart to what I observed and learned a little lesson from what I saw. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man." No one expects a thief. If you expected a thief, you wouldn't be robbed. He's got to jump on you out of the blue. And it's the same with an armed person. They jump out at you and attack you with a sword. And that's what poverty is like. But if you're lazy bit by bit, then you give this opportunity for poverty to jump upon you. Here we see the sluggard who has this vineyard. And a vineyard is quite a good thing to have. It shows you a reasonably wealthy person in that culture. But he doesn't do the hard work. And so the vineyard goes to rack and ruin. And perhaps we can think of our own examples. Maybe the young person who had a natural intelligence but couldn't be bothered to do revision for their exams and failed. Or the son who inherits money from his father but fritters it away rather than working hard to provide for his family. Or the lethargic middle-aged person who does the bare minimum each day and is the first to go when redundancies come. Now let me emphasize again, it's not the case that everybody who is poor is lazy. But there is a sense in which when we're lazy regularly, poverty is often the end result. There are other proverbs that say the same thing. So Proverbs 19 verse 15 says this, "Laziness brings on deep sleep and the shiftless go hungry." Or Proverbs 20, verse 4. "Sluggards do not plough in season, so at harvest time they look but find nothing." If you're not familiar with farming or gardening, you can't just put a seed in the ground and 10 days later you've got everything that you possibly could desire. You've got to sow your seed in season if it's going to bear fruit at harvest time. And we could think of similar things. If you don't listen to your teachers in September, then when the tests come round in June, you're going to struggle to learn it all quick enough. If you don't find new clients for your business, once the current jobs are finished, you're going to be in trouble. There's a certain amount of sowing the seeds in most works of life. Now, there are many more who say similar things as we go through, but the opposite is true as well. Not only will you be poor, but you'll also miss out on many of the good things in life. So, for example, Proverbs 12, verse 27, talks about a particular thing that people would like in that culture. The lazy do not roast any game, but the diligent feed on the riches of the hunt. If you wanted meat in that culture, you couldn't just pop down to Aldi and grab yourself some meat. You had to go and you had to hunt. If you're too lazy to go and hunt, then you never get to eat any meat. It's as simple as that. And Proverbs 13:4 says a similar thing. A sluggard's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. If you're lazy, the things you want in life, they're never going to come to you. But if you're diligent, if you do the hard work, then many of those good blessings that you enjoy will come. Now, this is not some kind of class warfare doing down the industrious working class person. It's saying a lazy person, whether he's born into wealth or born into poverty, will not succeed in life and will eventually become poor. Some people are born rich, yet squander it to poverty. Some are born poor, yet through grit make their way up the ladder. A lazy person is poor. So a lazy person is ridiculous, he is poor, he is thirdly deluded. You may think at a certain point, a foolish person would realise he needs to get his act together. But no, Proverbs 26 verse 16, which we read before, says, a sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven people who answer discreetly. We might think of a proud person not being willing to take advice, but in a strange way, a lazy person is often quite proud in their approach to advice as well. This lazy man doesn't listen to the wisdom of the world. He's convinced he can do as little as humanly possible and succeed in life. In our day, perhaps he's found a get-rich scheme on YouTube and he's convinced that now he doesn't need to work if he invests in that way. How could he think that? Well, Proverbs 12, verse 11 says, those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. And similarly, Proverbs 28, verse 19 says, those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies will have their fill of poverty. He has these fantasies, he has these dreams, but they're unrealistic. They're never going to come together. If you spoke to him, perhaps he wouldn't sound lazy. He'd sound like he's got his head screwed on. He's got all these grand plans, and you think, wow, what a fantastic life he's going to have. But talk isn't enough. Proverbs 14 23 says, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. Do you ever fall into that? Do you talk the talk, but struggle to walk the walk? It's a lot easier to talk about grand plans than to actually do the hard work. So a lazy person is ridiculous, he's poor, he's deluded, and fourthly, he's selfish. Proverbs 10:26 says, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so are sluggards to those who send them. I don't think I've ever washed my teeth with vinegar, so I'm not quite sure how bad that is. But I think we all know what it's like to have smoke in the eyes. It's really annoying. It's really frustrating, isn't it? And when you've relied on someone to do something and then they haven't done it, it's a complete pain, isn't it? It's selfish to do that. I used to hate it at uni when we got asked to do a bit of coursework in groups because you could guarantee there'd be at least one person who was going to do no work but was going to get the credit for all of yours. They'd unashamedly let everyone else do the lion's share for them. It's painful, isn't it? And it's selfish. It's a particular pain to a parent. Proverbs 10 verse 5, he who gathers crops in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps during a harvest is a disgraceful son. In this culture, a bit like we mentioned last week, work was a family affair. So you'd be working as a family on the family farm. And in harvest time, you particularly needed all hands on deck. On Tuesday, we came to the members' meeting, and Nat and I noticed that there was a tractor going about that field in the dark with its lights on, because it was harvest time. And when it's harvest time, you just got to get that crop in as quickly as possible. But if son's laying in bed, can't be bothered to get out, it's going to affect the whole family. The whole family could be struggling to make ends meet for the rest of the year. Today, it's seen in children failing to recognise the pressures upon their parents and serving in a way they can. Obviously, a two-year-old can't do very much to contribute to a house, but when you get towards your teenage years, or maybe if you're a young adult living at home, you can contribute, you can help your family, and if you don't do that, it's selfish. But it's even broader than that. Proverbs 21, verses 25 to 26, shows that a lazy person is bad for society as a whole. Proverbs 21, 25 to 26 says, "The craving of a sluggard will be the death of him, because his hands refuse to work. All day long he craves for more, but the righteous give without sparing." Contrast here a lazy person and a generous person, which might seem like a weird combination to us. But the point is this: a lazy person is always going to be struggling to fulfill their own debts. They're always going to be quite poor because they're not going to be able to earn extra money. Whereas a person who's working hard, they might earn more money, and that doesn't mean that they're going to be spending it on themselves. It's actually going to mean that they've got more money to be generous to people around them. If you're diligent, you have enough for yourself and you have some to spare to bless your family, your neighbours, your church, even strangers who might be in need. And so when it comes to work, we don't want to do the minimum amount to pay our own bills. We want to be able to help people around us. And a lazy person can't do that. It affects the whole of society. A similar idea is conveyed in Proverbs 20, verse 13. "Do not love sleep or you will grow poor. Stay awake and you'll have food to spare." Food to spare, food to share with other people who weren't able to bring in food for themselves. So a lazy person is ridiculous, poor, deluded, selfish. And finally, to sum it all up, a lazy person is destructive. Proverbs 18, verse 9. "One who is slack in his work is brother to one who destroys." We go back to our farming image. Imagine the big barn that is full of the crops for the year, and someone comes along and sets it alight, and a whole year's income is gone. That's someone who destroys. But the Proverbs writer says, well, hang on. The lazy person is doing the same thing, because the grain never got into that barn in the first place. So he's brother to the one who destroys. He's doing the same job. And we can see that, can't we? How laziness can undermine the building of something great, something encouraging. Laziness destroys. Now, you might be thinking at this point, well, hang on, isn't there a balancing point here? What about rest? Isn't it possible to overwork? Absolutely, it is. Proverbs doesn't have much to say about it. Perhaps that's because it's speaking to young men, and young men don't particularly tend towards overwork. But it does mention it in the rest of the Bible. And the Bible actually reflects the need for rest in its most basic sense of time. We have 6 days to work, and we have one Sabbath day to rest. In fact, even in the day itself, we have the light to work, and the dark, which before electric lights you couldn't work, that's for sleeping, that's for resting. So there is time to rest and recover. The fourth commandment says, 6 days you shall labour, work hard, and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. And in ancient Israel, there are other Sabbath rests as well, not just the weekly Sabbath, but various other festivals. And in the seventh year, they actually didn't do any farm work at all. They just let the farmland regrow so that they could, it's actually really good for the growth of crops. They realised that in the agricultural revolution. But just let the land grow organically and you just gather what you could from the land rather than working it and farming it as you'd done the other 6 years. So within Israelite culture, there was this pattern of rest. And so if someone was following that, they shouldn't be burning themselves out. What is happening here is someone is going and sleeping beyond the night time. He's taking days off beyond the Sabbath rest. He's taking holidays almost all the time. He's letting the land grow fallow, not on the seventh year, but every year. That's what the problem is. So it's not that there isn't a place for rest and recovery. And maybe some of us need to hear that more than we need to hear the command to avoid laziness. But nonetheless, there are some people who within that pattern are still lazy. I should also mention that sometimes health, disability, and age can make it harder for us to do what we once did. And I know a number of older Christians who feel very guilty that they can't do what they once did. There's no need to feel guilt for such things. God knows our frames. He knows that we're like dust. He knows that we age and we get tired. That is not what he's challenging at all. He's challenging a healthy young person who has got the ability to go out and do work, but isn't doing it. We're not called to exhaustion, but we are called to work hard. Now, I mentioned before that our forefathers identified laziness in two areas, in our secular work and in our spiritual disciplines. So consider those. Are you lazy at work? Perhaps you're a student skipping the hard work of revision. Perhaps as an office worker, you're doing the bare minimum on a daily basis. Or perhaps at home, you're using time that should be used to do the housework that needs to be done for relaxation again and again and again. Or maybe you're lazy in spiritual disciplines. You always seem to find an excuse not to be meeting with God's people. You have hours for social media, but not 2 minutes for prayer. You don't serve others, but you expect others to be serving you in the life of the church. Do you hear the warnings of Proverbs? Do you see how ridiculous you can be in your laziness? Do you see how it may drive you to poverty and challenges at work and a poor spiritual life as well? Do you see how you delude yourself with stories explaining away why you don't have to work like everyone else does? Do you see how selfish it is when you expect others to do their part, but you not to do yours? Do you see how laziness destroys any good work you do, like setting light to a barn? Laziness is a force of sin in our lives, a force that is particularly strong in our day and age. Don't let it get a hold. But what about the diligent person? Thankfully, it's not all negative. There is this picture of the fruits that come from being diligent. And there are three characteristics that Proverbs describes in particular. The diligent are proactive, they're prosperous, and they're promoted. So firstly, the diligent are proactive. Have a look at Proverbs 27, verses 23 to 27. Which says this. Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds. For riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. When the hay is removed and new growth appears, and the grass from the hills is gathered in, the lambs will provide you with clothing, and the goats with the price of a field. You will have plenty of goat's milk to feed your family and to nourish your female servants. See what I mean by proactive? This farmer isn't just responding to crises as they arrive. He's going out. He's seeing how his flock is doing. He knows how each individual sheep is, what sheep is injured, what sheep needs what kind of food. Are they doing well? Are they not getting in enough food? Have they got illnesses? Have they got injuries? Are they about to give birth? And he needs to keep an eye on them to see when the new ones are born. He's aware of what's going on. He's proactive so that he can jump on it whenever an issue appears. Wealth is not automatic. Even if you inherit wealth from your parents, like this man did with his big flock, it doesn't last forever. If a person keeps his flock well, in this day he would have clothes, goats, milk, and everything he needed. And if we are aware of the things that we depend upon, then we'll be okay as well. So we've got to be proactive. Proverbs 31 puts it into the context of a woman working at home. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She's not idly waiting. She's watching over her house. She knows how her husband and her children and, in that culture, her servants are doing. She's able to act in line with that. And you can put that into any area of your life. A businessman will know his business from top to bottom. A parent will know how their children are doing. If you're in YP, you'll know how the leaders are doing, how the individual kids are doing. A diligent person is proactive. They're finding out what they can do to serve. And as a result, a diligent person is prosperous. Again, the aim is not to be super rich and to make wealth the center of everything, but we don't want to be poor. We want to have enough to be able to pay our mortgage and to be able to feed our children and to be able to have enough to spare to be generous towards others as well. And that's what prosperity is in the eyes of Proverbs. And if you want that, well, you've got to not be lazy. I think we might have already read this, but Proverbs 10 verse 4 said the negative, which was lazy hands make for poverty, but it contrasts that with, but diligent hands bring wealth. If you work hard, you'll get the income you need for your family. It's as simple as that. Proverbs 15:19 puts it a little bit more poetically. The way of the sluggard is blocked with thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. When it talks about a highway, it's not talking about the M6 or something like that. They didn't have those in that day. I took my kids for a walk to Haslington recently. On the map, it looked great, but every single one of the stiles we walked to was just covered with nettles and brambles. And so everyone was getting stung and scratched. It was an absolute disaster. It didn't work at all. And so on the way back, we just walked down the road. And it was clear and it was straight. Nobody was getting stung. Nobody was slowed down. We could just go straight through. And that's the picture here. When we're lazy, it's like thorns covering over the stile that drag us back, that damage us. But if we clear that away with diligence, then everything is faster, everything is safer. Working hard is like clearing a path so that you can easily walk through it. Maybe hard work in the short term, but in the longer term, it's much easier. So diligence is proactive, it's prosperous, and finally, diligence is promoted. Again, this is just common sense, but Proverbs wants us to know it. People who work hard generally get promoted. Proverbs 22, verse 29 says this. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank. And then again, Proverbs 12, verse 24 says, diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in forced labor. It ends in slavery, which in that world it did. If you went into poverty, you had to become a slave. So over time, in the general course of the universe, and there are, of course, exceptions, the cream generally does rise to the top. When you look at who to promote at work, the person who's hardworking, they're going to stand out. The hardworking student generally is the one who gets the good grades, even more than the naturally intelligent student. Generally, we want to have a positive influence. We want to succeed. We want to move up the ladder in our places of work. We do that by diligence. Now's the time to look at your life in the perspective of diligence. What would diligence look like in your place of work? How could you be proactive dealing with the problems that come before they hit home? How would that make you prosperous? Not a millionaire, but able to pay your bills and to be safe and secure. Could you see how that would give you a promotion that you'd actually maybe do better in your workplace? Or what about for studying? How are you going to use your holidays, or how have you used your holidays? How are you going to approach this next year? Are you going to be learning all the way through? Are you going to be keeping up with the activities that you've got to do to finish your assignments during the year? Or are you going to leave it to the last minute and get the grades that reflect that? How about with your spiritual life? Are you going to be diligent in reading God's word, even if every day it doesn't necessarily seem like God is changing the world for you, but you're going to slowly but surely, a bit at a time, read and pray and grow? If we're diligent, then it's rewarded. Now, all of this must be understood in the context that we are saved by grace. And so as we look at our lives, we first of all must run to Jesus, because we've all been lazy. We've all failed to do the work that we should. Thankfully, Jesus was never lazy. He was always diligent. And he had not only enough to fill his own righteousness, he had more than enough to spare. And we benefit from that. So if you feel the guilt of your own laziness this evening, then good news. You can come to Jesus and have that washed away. But then hear the encouragement God gives you. Hear the encouragement that he doesn't want you to just be the boring person sat flicking on their phone and doing nothing with their lives. He wants you to live a life that is going to be making a difference in the world. He wants to affect your life in the workplace. It's always going to be hard at work, but there are blessings. If you strive at your work on Monday, if you work as hard as you can without burning yourself out, God will be pleased. And generally speaking, it will be rewarded. Sitting on your backside doing nothing, that's a very dreary existence. He's given you a much better plan. Whatever sphere of work he gives you, in the home, in the workplace, in the church, wherever it may be, dive into it with joy. And God will use that for his own glory. And hear the call to work hard in your faith as well. What a joy it is to be able to daily come to him in prayer. Yes, it is a burden. It is hard work. It is labour. But in the long run, it's a blessing. What a blessing to gather with his people. When you make the effort to come regularly, you'll have friends and family, ultimately. Brothers and sisters who will care for you when you're at your lowest ebb. What a joy to be co-workers with God in taking his gospel to the world. There is nothing that compares to seeing a person saved through your ministry. Why wouldn't you want to do that with your Friday night or whenever it might be? Of course, it doesn't always feel that way. Bed is always going to be more appealing than hard work. But in the long run, it is so much better. We're not saved as a reward for work. No, work is a reward for Christ having saved you. And it's one of the blessings that Jesus gives us. He gives us a life worth living, a meaningful life. Don't burn yourself out. But go hard in serving to the glory of Jesus and see the many blessings that come with that.